Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we are going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects. What is that? Dogs. But in particular, this is going to be a very special dog. His name is Merle. His wonderful publication, which is a national bestseller, is Merle's Door. These are all about lessons from a free-thinking dog, and the guest that we have today is Ted Sarasoti. Ted, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Donna.
Well, Ted, I really was enthralled with your book, not only because is Merle's story interesting, but the fact that you, in your book, give all kinds of interesting points of insight into the nature of dogs and some medical and scientific research regarding them. And I want my audience to know a little bit about you. Dogs have been a very, very significant part of your life from, you know, just from when you were a kid up to now. And the last 25 years, you've been observing the behavior of wild wolves in Alaska and the Rockies. You've written for more than 50 periodicals, including the Audubon, National Geographic Traveler, Outside, Salon, and the New York Times. And you have had another best-selling book called Out There in the Wild in a Wired Age. And this one about Merle, though, you could feel your heart in this. Of course, this is a dog that you had such a special, special relationship with. How did Merle come into your life? Tell us that story.
It was an April evening in 1991, and several friends and I had driven down from Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where I live, to southern Utah to do a river trip on a river called the San Juan. And as we pulled in to the starting point of our river trip, Sand Island on the San Juan River, it was about 11:30 at night, and there in my headlights appeared this big golden dog panting, his front paws tapping the ground in a little dance. And we were in two cars. We opened our doors. I was driving one of the trucks. And he did that sniffing scan that dogs do, raising their snout and scenting the air. And he came right over to my door, sniffed at my bare thigh, looked up into my eyes with a look of excited consideration, and said, "You need a dog, and I'm it." And he was such a handsome dog. He looked like a fox red colored yellow lab, maybe with a bit of hound thrown in. And I gave him a pat, said, "Good dog," and went over. We threw our sleeping bags down on the sand under the cottonwood trees, and he came right over to my sleeping bag, dug a nest by my side. And I found him there the next morning, and after breakfast, I said, "Hey, you want to go down the river with us?" And he did, and we took him down the river. He swam between the kayaks, rode on the rafts, and at the end of the trip, I asked him if he wanted to come back to Wyoming and be a Wyoming dog, and he jumped in the truck, and 13 and a half years later, we had spent an incredible amount of time outdoors together. At that point in my life, I was making my living as a freelance magazine writer and photographer, and part of my job was to spend lots of time testing equipment outdoors, going on river trips, ski trips, horsepacking trips, backpacking trips, ride mountain bikes. So Merle had an exceptionally rich life as a dog. He lived every dog's dream life, because he got to be outside a lot, and I also installed a dog door in my house so he could come and go as he wished and continue to lead the life he loved so much in the outdoors. and having the freedom to come and go as he wished, set his own schedule, make friends with the other dogs and people in our small village of 90 people here on the edge of Grand Teton National Park, turned him into an incredibly independently thinking, self-actualized dog, which he was when we met. He was probably 10 months old and by all appearances making his own living out there on his own. He was able to catch ground squirrels just like that. His freedom and what I saw in how it developed his mental and emotional faculties gave me a clue in how dogs can reach more of their potential if we stop telling them what to do all the time, if we stop being their alpha all the time, if we stop micromanaging their behavior, as so many dog training books have counseled over the years.
You have so many interesting points in your book. When you first met Merle, and you've got a picture of him, he looked really, really thin. Of course, surviving in the wild, you're not going to be plump and fat unless you're lucky in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But he really grew into a magnificent, magnificent dog with his wonderful coat. And you have in here something about the Hidatsa Native American tribe of the Northern Great Plains. And they had a saying about the dogs, certain dogs, they call them four-eyes. And they
exactly.
said, if you have one that's a four-eye, they're especially gentle and they have magical powers. And they are known traditionally for being very psychic animals. And they were very easy to read. In other words, for a human to communicate with them, it was a lot easier. Merle was one of these dogs, wasn't he?
He was indeed. He had very noticeable darker brow markings above his eyes, and a darker colored fur, a deep, deep, rich, almost coffee color that stood out from his fox red coat. And he had the ability to move his eyebrows independently of each other, which he would do when he was questioning what I did, or if he wanted to emphasize something, or if he looked very concerned, he'd furrow his brow. And the darker color over the brows makes these dogs' facial expressions easier to read. And one of my contentions is that dogs and humans can hold conversations, and many people who are listening, I'm sure, will agree with this. They hold conversations with their own dogs. And by looking at our dogs' facial expressions, listening to their many different vocalizations, and watching their body posture and how they hold their tail, we can actually translate from doggish to English or French or Chinese or whatever other human language we speak. And thus, dogs are kind of emissaries from a foreign culture and can teach us a lot about things that we don't know because we don't have as good senses in that particular realm as do dogs. And the most noticeable one is that of smell. Merle, like most dogs, had a much keener smell than humans. And because he spent so much time in the wild, he developed different body postures according to what he was smelling. So coyotes, for example, he'd always be very disdainful when he smelled their spoor because he was bigger than they. However, if he smelled wolf poop, he got very serious and would give me this look of, the big dog has stood here.
Mm-hmm.
If he saw a grizzly bear poop or smelled it, he would get very, very serious because he had seen lots of grizzly bears and they were obviously big, dangerous animals. The same thing with moose, because there were a lot of moose around our house. Moose had chased us while we were skiing. Merle knew this was not an animal to be toyed with. Whereas elk, which we typically ate, he would get very excited about because he knew that there was maybe fresh meat in store. So I would watch Merle, and even from a distance, I could tell after a couple of years what he was smelling. And I think this is one of the things that dogs can teach us, is this acute awareness of how the world smells compared to our rather paltry sense of smell.
I think that's true. There's so much that we can learn from animals. And I have two Scottish Terriers, and I can tell you, I talk to them all the time. It's just something, and one of them, we adopted both of the Scotties, and one of them is 8 years old and the other is two. The two-year-old is so communicative, it's unbelievable. The eight-year-old, we've had her now, we got her when she was six, so she has learned to do this, but her learned behavior prior to being in our household was much different. But they do learn, and they do have a way of communicating that's just incredible. I think it's wonderful when, whether it's with dogs or even with cats, I think every species has its way of communicating, and it takes a particular awareness and an openness on the part of a human being to be receptive to that. You look in many primitive, well, we are defined as primitive cultures. I have to chuckle whenever I use that word, because they're not as primitive as we think they are. But in the definition of a primitive culture, they often had that empathy with creatures, all kinds of creatures. Mm-hmm. But dogs have had always that very, very special relationship. And you quote Charles Darwin in your book, saying that Charles Darwin once said, there's no fundamental difference between man and higher mammals in their mental faculties. And I would say that's true. I've seen that on so many different levels. They feel pain, they are emotional, and I think one of the most distressing things that I've heard is people who have not really been able to develop their own sense, well, they will say, these animals are dumb animals, they don't know anything, you just feed them a bone or whatever and that's it, forget it. And it really bothers me because they are living, thinking beings. And I'm not saying this to be melodramatic or mushy. I really mean that.
Yeah. And it was one of the very reasons that I wanted to write Merle's biography. I wanted, first of all, to validate those dog owners who feel as you do, that dogs are very emotive, intelligent beings who are far underestimated in their capabilities, and also perhaps allow those people who thought that that was not the case to have some both narrative examples from Merle's life as well as scientific evidence to show that dogs are really quite clever, especially if we give them the freedom to get a broad education. And what do I mean by this? Well, the traditional notion of training dogs has come from watching captive wolves in zoos, where an alpha male rules the pack with an iron paw. And because we've seen this in zoos, the logical inference has been that therefore we should treat dogs similarly, since dogs are genetically and behaviorally gray wolves. All of them, from the Great Dane down to a tiny Chihuahua, mm-hmm. are gray wolves. However, in 1995, an amazing thing happened. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service introduced wolves into Yellowstone National Park, where they had been native, they had been exterminated, and for the last 15 or 13 years, we've been able to watch many of these wolves because they've been radio collared, both from the ground and from the air, we've been able to see them, and watch them go about their business as wild wolves in multi-generational packs. What we've seen is truly amazing. We've seen that an alpha male and female wolf actually share the leadership of their pack and share decision-making. Sometimes the alpha male and sometimes the alpha female saying, you know, we should go over there and hunt. No, we should go over there. And they split this leadership about 50-50. Then, when their pups become more than a year old, in other words, teenage wolves, mm-hmm. They begin to delegate responsibility for running the pack to these maturing wolves, allowing them to choose whom to hunt, where to hunt, and when to move the pack. Eventually, some of these wolves go off on their own, disperse, and become the alphas of their own packs. And so what we've seen is that subordination, being a subordinate animal, a beta animal or a gamma animal is not an enduring trait, but a passage to a mature adult state. So my contention is that since dogs are genetically and behaviorally wolves, we ought to treat our young pups and our dogs in the same way, giving them the opportunity to make some of their decisions, some of the time, what I call freedom with boundaries, since a lot of us live in urban places, you can't let your dog run out in traffic.
Right.
However, say you go to a dog park, a big municipal park that has off-leash hours, that's the time to take your dog off-leash, let it smell the world at its own pace, not in that narrow 6-foot corridor that the leash provides. And if it wants to linger over a scent for 7 minutes, you let it. If it wants to meet other dogs on its terms, you let it. And the more opportunities that a dog has to do those things, especially if you can get it to the beach or the woods on the weekend, those places are like libraries for a dog, and it begins to piece together the smells of its world and become a calmer, better behaved dog, which many studies, especially those that the San Francisco ASPCA has done, have shown. Off-leash dogs, dogs who get to spend time roaming about on their own under the voice control of their human naturally, are better mannered, safer dogs. These are the dogs that bite less frequently. And why? It's simply because the dog is less frustrated and has more time, just like a young teenager, to learn the world on its own and not always be under its parents' thumb.
I can relate to what you're saying. In the area that we live in, we have some forests, and our dogs are fortunate because they have a somewhat wild section in the backyard. The Scotties aren't as big as Merle was, but we had a raccoon that was up in a tree in a neighbor's yard adjacent, and it was fun just to watch the actions between the animals and the communication that went on between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something that it is fascinating when you can watch them and when they do have a chance to roam and they do have a chance to explore. And there are those behavioral patterns. And Merle had some interesting experiences, though. And one of them, you used an electric collar with him, or a shop collar, I guess I should call it,
mm-hmm.
because of a woman by the name of Lucille.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to share that story, because I thought that was a hoot.
Well, there are problems with freedom.
Here we go.
Yeah, and one of the problems is, in a village like this, where you have people who want to feed every dog that comes by, and dogs still being, going back to the analogy of their being genetically wolves, are hardwired, programmed, to eat as much as they can whenever they can, just the way a wolf would, because in the wild, if you pass up a big meal, you don't know when the next one is going to come. And for a wolf, it works great, because they have to catch their own food. It comes in big finds, a big elk or a moose, and then you don't find something for a week or so. So, dogs, however, if given the opportunity, will just keep eating and eating and eating and grow fat. And this is what happened to Merle when this woman, Lucille, started feeding him filet mignon and chicken breasts.
Filet mignon, oh my goodness.
Stuffed with Roquefort cheese. And Lucille worked at a local resort, and she would go to the kitchen before she came home and bring all this food for the dogs. And Merle just honed in on her and would show up there every day, faithful as clockwork, and started really putting on weight. So I went to Lucille and asked her to stop doing this, and she said, "He's so cute, I can't stop doing it. I just can't stop." And so she wouldn't stop, and I didn't want to keep Merle in the house, and I didn't want to chain him up. And so the only way I could figure out to stop him, after going there repeatedly and trying to lure him away with a biscuit and say, "Let's go for a bike ride, let's go for a hike," and he'd grudgingly get in the car and give me that look of, a biscuit and a hike compared to filet mignon? You got to be kidding. So finally I said, you can't learn, Merle. So with a heavy heart, I put a shock collar on him, and when he would go over there, I'd go over and find him, and I'd shock him. And after about 3-4 times, he stopped going over there. And it was the only time I ever used it on Merle. And it worked. And sometimes, if you're going to have a free-roaming dog, you may have to institute some sort of negative reinforcement when positive reinforcement, which I tried first, simply didn't work. For me, I think the price of freedom or the benefits of freedom were well worth shocking Merle a few times.
Well, I think it's not unlike raising a child. You have to, you have a responsibility with a dog. You are their caretaker. And in your case, Merle adopted you, which I think is one of the best ways to ever get a dog, because they let you know they want to be with you. And they're choosing you for a reason. And that's my bias. That's my position, because that's how I felt about every dog we've ever gotten. There's been something very special with each dog. And I know there's many of my listeners that can relate to that relative to the pets that they've chosen. But there are those disciplines that they must have for their own safety. And in this case, it had to do with food and the fact that the other human in the picture was not going to honor the request, because it gave her a lot of satisfaction to see him pig out, but it wasn't to his best interest. So that, and you didn't want to make an enemy of her, so that was something. But they are really intelligent. Now, you ended up getting another dog, Bauer.
Bauer was Merle's good buddy. He was the pup of my then-girlfriend. And so Merle met Bauer when he was, probably about 9 weeks old, and they remained friends for the rest of their lives. And as happens when a young pup is introduced to an older dog who likes the pup, they developed the relationship of mentor and student, uncle and nephew, if you will. And Merle taught Bauer everything he knew. And I would often see them leave the house and set off through Kelly on their rounds and come back 3 hours later with great big grins on their face and say, and they'd say, God, you're still working at your desk. You don't know what you missed out there.
Now, you had Merle for so many years, and I love the photographs that you include in the book, because the photos tell such a wonderful story. Both Merle and Bauer went with you, Brower went with you so many places. And the time came when you had to say goodbye to your friend. Regrettably, our dogs do not live for 25 years. But this was a companion for you that up until the end, he communicated with you very, very clearly. But the story that you tell about Merle includes so many variables and so many points of research and information, like you've just talked about with the wolves. And for you as a man, as a person that has written about nature, with Merle, what was some of the most significant things that you learned from him as this wonderful companion?
One of the most important things I learned from Merle about being in the outdoors was not to let one's presuppositions about what one wanted to happen override one's search pattern. And what do I mean by this? Humans are very good at saying, I think something is going to appear over there. And in our case, say, I want some elk to appear over there. And to use other analogies, we can expect the stock market to go up. We can expect an inheritance. There are many things that we can expect. When I was with Merle, I would sometimes be looking in one direction and he would be sitting behind me, and he'd give the tiniest little whine, like, and I'd say, shh, watch over there. The elk are going to come out over there. And he'd give another little whine, and I'd say, be quiet. And finally, he would nudge me with his head, and I'd turn around, and he'd give this leading point with his nose behind us where there'd be three elk walking. And Merle did not let his expectations trip him up that way. He constantly was looking all around. He didn't have that human tendency to set oneself up and want things to happen in a certain way. He was open to what the world gave him and was constantly looking at the world for what was going to happen. I think that was one of the key lessons, probably the most important one in the outdoors. Certainly, interpersonally, the most important lesson he taught me was that all of our partners, whether they be human or canine, almost always know more about what is going to make them happy than we do. And of course, we can discuss it with them, but so many of us are set upon having our dogs or our human partners do what we want to do all the time. And Merle showed me that even as a dog, he knew what he liked to eat, he knew what kind of schedule he wanted to keep, he preferred certain activities over other ones, he did not like bird hunting at all, and finally I just had to step back and say, you know, Merle knows more about what makes him happy than I do. And at that point, you open your hand and you just let your partner be, whether it be a human or a dog.
What wonderful insights from a very, very special buddy that you had for 13 and a half years. This book, ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you, is wonderful. It's Merle's Door, Lessons from a Free-Thinking Dog. And, Ted, I just love the photograph of Merle on that cover.
Oh, well, thank
you. It's just so awesome. And I think animals are such a joy, and we underestimate them. I know I always get a kick out of just observing my own terriers and their communication skills and the way that they adapt and the differences in their personality. But I think that's just the way it is with life. I think every living thing has its own particular agenda. And I think your lesson of if you really love someone or if you really love your pets, you learn how to live together cooperatively, but you do respect certain things. You pay attention. And it does make a difference. And they respond in kind. I have to tell you that I do have a Scottish Terrier, like I said, the two, but the one, Victor, is very much a gourmet Scotty. He has a way of letting me know that certain dog food is acceptable and other is preferable. Thank you very much. So they have their ways of communicating, and that's why when I was reading Merle, I thought, oh boy, have I been through this more than once with my friends through the years. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. Now, do you have a website?
I do. It's kerasote.com, KERASOTE.com, and on the website is also a slideshow of Merle's life. There's 53 photos, both stills, and they're included in a slideshow that's set to Merle's favorite dance tune, Big Bug Shuffle. And people can go and see quite a few more photos of Merle than are in the paperback edition. They can see my other books, and they can order Merle's Door if they want. There are many links to various booksellers like Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Ted, it has been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you for putting your story together in a form that we can all enjoy. Merle's Door, Lessons from a Free-Thinking Dog. Keep up the good work, and may you have many more companions like Merle.
Thank you very much, Donna, for having me on your show.
It's been a delight. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't you go anywhere. We've got a lot of other good things to share with you, including open telephone lines. So we'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyMD.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hello, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. If you would like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, please do so. The telephone number is 877-876-5227. That's for the U.S., 877-876-5227. For Canadians, we have 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756, and also 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, let me do my thing. In fact, we've got a caller on the line right now. We'll show you how it's done, and then you'll be able to call in if you so desire. Welcome to the show, caller, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Lisa, and I'm calling from Michigan.
Where in Michigan, Lisa?
From Commerce.
Commerce, Michigan. Well, I hope you have an absolutely fabulous summer. I'm sure it's just getting to be gloriously beautiful there. But let's let's get down to business with you. First, I want you to start developing your business acumen. I want you to start reading magazines and books on the development of business, entrepreneurial information, anything that crosses your path that you find that you're curious about in reading material. I want you to do this because you are going to have the opportunity within the next 4 years to do something in business with someone else, and it is going to be imperative that you have good, sound business basics so that you can be comfortable and not end up being ill because of anxiety of not understanding the basic principles of sound business. Now, you are a person that is so gutsy when it comes to taking care of other people or helping other people, but when it comes to yourself, you're always the last one on the list. And I want you to reverse that because I am seeing some health concerns that are evolving, and they're being induced, I believe, from stress. I think you internalize everything so much. You need to have some venue, whether it's writing, art, horseback riding, singing, I don't care what that venue would be. Could be multiple venues. You need to find some way of relieving stress so that you can have the clarity in your thinking. I'll tell you why that's so important. You are highly intuitive. Psychic ability runs in the family. It is not something that has been that openly discussed, but you have had a number of intuitive experiences that you really wish you could have talked to someone about, but you didn't know that it was okay. Well, finally, you're reaching a maturation in your life where you're saying, I'm going to talk about this stuff anyway. I've got to get some answers. And I can really empathize with that because that happened to me many years ago. So you need to know that's one of the reasons why you have to have a good way to handle stress. Because, again, you internalize things. And all of this blends. You need to know that it's not your imagination. What you are experiencing is very real, but you need to learn how to understand it so you can utilize it in everyday life. So maybe keeping a journal will help you. But you're the only one that can make the choices about how to deal with your stress effectively so that it doesn't undermine you and sabotage you. What's your question for me today?
Wow, that was a lot to hear.
Did any of it make
sense? Oh, yeah. Oh, I believe that's about it for sure. What I was wondering about, I'm going to be going on a road trip to see my parents, and I'm a little bit nervous about it, and I just wondered how do you see it being.
Well, where are Mom and Dad located?
About 3 hours north of me.
All right. Why are you anxious about this? Is it because the car isn't in that good a condition? I'm looking at a tire that may be vulnerable to going flat. Have you had your vehicle checked before you take the trip?
What was that, my friend?
Have you had the vehicle checked?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Just be aware. Make sure you've got a good spare in case something goes wrong with a tire.
Okay.
Check your spare. But I really am not seeing a problem other than something potentially with the a tire. And
okay.
I'm wondering, I'm looking at this, I'm seeing a tire, but I'm not sure which one of the four. There's a tire that is vulnerable. Apparently, it has something to do with the way the tread is wearing in the tire. There's a vulnerability to it. So I don't know that it's that big a deal because I think the trip is going to be fine.
I just had my car in yesterday and it got all checked and they checked the tires and rotated them and everything and they said they were fine.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, that's all right. Just make sure you've got a good spare.
Okay.
Doesn't mean anything has to happen. That's just to be on the safe side.
Okay. Okay, so you think it's going to be all right?
Oh, yes. I think the trip's going to be fine. The only thing I would recommend, 3 hours is not that long a trip, but I would say why don't you plan for 4? Just so that if you want to take a break, you know, get some water to drink or stop at a rest stop, go ahead and do it. Don't put yourself under a lot of unnecessary stress. How long are you going to be visiting with your family?
For about 3 days. I'm just a little bit stressed because I'm not sure about how it'll be with my mom and my dad. I haven't seen them for a while, and I'm afraid that some questions may come up, and I'm not sure how they'll like my answers.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you, before you leave, give yourself some time and take a few long walks. And when you're doing your walking, do an imaginary conversation with your parents. I don't know that they're going to really be that concerned and ask you that many questions. Your mother might, but I think they've got so much on their minds, so much that's going on, that the biggest thing that they want to know is that you're all right.
Okay.
And all you need to do is remember that that is the biggest concern that they have. But they have been going through some tough times themselves. And I would say be a good listener. be there and be truthful with them, but you don't have to tell them everything, dear. That's not necessary. They don't want to know everything.
Okay.
Most important thing is that you're okay, that you're making good decisions, and you are thinking things through. But I really mean it, what I said about preparing for business.
Okay.
I want you to start developing a library, and I want you to be open to educating yourself about working with money and perhaps having that opportunity of being an entrepreneur with someone who is going to be reputable. Because
okay.
I see that opportunity coming.
So they're probably not in my life right now.
No, I don't see the situation in your life right now. I'm looking at it in about 4 years.
Okay. Well, you've been very gracious. I appreciate everything you've told me, and I keep it close in my heart.
Well, bless your heart. And I want you to know, it's a delight having you on the air. Thank you so much for calling in. How'd you learn about the show?
Okay. Take care. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Donna Sebo, and if you want to give me a buzz, that's how simple it is. No special routine or ritual. Just give me a buzz at 877-876-5227, Canadian 888-815-9756, and 530-876-3222. And I want to let you know who's coming on next week. Oh, we've got a good lineup of people. We're going to be talking about how you can win. If you want to be a leader, if you're a person that's in business, you're going to want to hear Brian Molitor, his book, Win, Win, Win. I know we've got a caller, but I want to finish giving out this information, so please bear with me. Then on Tuesday, we're going to be talking with Katie Mulhaney, Arizona. Yes, we're going to get acquainted with some of the spooks of Arizona. And then we're going to have the Shattered Pearl, Sarah Armstrong. This is profound. It is about Ghana. We are going to be going back and touching into a time of history in Africa that is unbelievable. And then I've got a special guest that's coming on, Lori Hansen. Now, she's not up on the list of my guests for the month. It's all about bulimia. Her book is titled, It Started with Pop-Tarts. This is a must-listen. Anyway, those are the guests that are coming up next week. Tell your friends and be sure you tune in. And don't forget, we have the archives. So if you miss a show, you can always go in and listen to it at your convenience whenever you're ready to do that. Let's go to our next caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from? Hello, caller.
Hello.
Yes, dear. Your first name or initial, please.
Yes, I was wondering about the publishing contracts.
All right. Can you give me your first name or initial and tell me where you're calling from, please?
My name is Lynn, and I'm calling from Montana.
From Montana. Oh, gorgeous country. All right. Now, Lynn, you're asking about a publishing contract. I'm actually looking at two different contracts. So you're going to need to be specific with me. Is this regarding a fictitious or a non-fiction book?
It's called Spiritual 911 Healing Handbook.
All right. This one, I am seeing you having a potential of working with two different publishers. Now, I have to caution you. The first one that I'm seeing you interacting with, it may sound all wonderful. You do not sign anything until you actually get the contract and you can read through the contract. Assume nothing. Because the percentage that you would be able to get and the terms of the agreement are very undesirable. You need to know you will be in a position to negotiate. There is a second opportunity with a publisher, but this is both of these seem to be on the smaller side. Of the publishing house size. And so when I look at the second one, you may not have very much room for negotiation, but you need to make sure that if they want to have the rights to print your material, that you give it to them for a short period of time. So if you wanted to research and find another publisher other than them, then you could do that. So I'd like for you to do some homework because there is going to be a publishing contract, and I'm seeing an opportunity for two different ones. But I'm not real excited about the conditions with either one of them. You have to be astutely aware of how you set it up so that you do not lock yourself into a situation that could go on for years.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be very, very aware.
Okay. I was working with a literary agency. Will they be able to help me?
Well, I think the agency will be able to help you to a point, but you need to educate yourself. You want to be able to read whatever material you can on working with contracts to find out what you should expect. Now, that doesn't mean that it's written in concrete for the eternities, and not every publishing house is going to work in the same way. But you want to be sure that there are certain things that you will receive. And you need to realize that this is a beginning for you because you have a total of 4 books that I'm seeing you putting out eventually. So I want you to have an understanding of the industry so that you can feel at ease in your negotiations, where there's no arrogance, there's no assumptions, but everything's crisp, clean, and out on the table.
Okay. When will they be coming?
Well, all 4 books, I'm not able to give you the exact time frame. The first one, I think, may be within a year to a year and a half.
Okay.
You have not finished this book that you're working on right now.
Oh. Hmm.
You really have not finished it. I think that you have got a substantial amount of content, but you need to sort of let it rest and then allow yourself to reread it from the positioning of being someone like on the outside reading it, and maybe have a few people read it for you and ask them, what do you feel after reading it? You don't want your best buddy that goes and says, oh, this is absolutely the most wonderful stuff in the world. You just really want to get good perspective on this, hon, so you can be very critical with it.
Okay.
And I want to thank you for your call.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Donna Siebel here. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And phone lines are open, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Siebel. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hello, this is Donna Siebel, and I want to say for those of you in the state of Washington, you must set aside one of your weekends during the upcoming month of August. And that's, I'm talking about the first 3 weekends in August. Why? Because there is a fabulous event, the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. And for those of you in different parts of the country that are listening to this, hey, come on in and fly into Washington. It'll be absolutely gorgeous here, give you a chance to see the evergreen state. But this is an event I'm so pleased to be a part of because it is totally magical. I get to get dressed up along with hundreds of other people in costumes and play queen for a day. It's absolutely fabulous. And we have a chance to interact with so many of you that come out. Now, if you're in the state of Washington, you probably have heard about the Renaissance Fair because this is its 11th year. And we are in a new location this year. That's right. We are in Belfair, Washington. We have acquired a 206-acre site. This is incredibly gorgeous. And you are going to be able to come out and experience an event that is totally, totally fantasy. And you can leave the world of work and discomfort and agitation and stress behind as you enter through the gates of the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. So get your information. Go to their website, WashingtonRenFair.com. That's Washington, RENFAIRE.com. And you'll be able to get all kinds of information. You'll see a lot of the photos about the site being developed. And believe me, they're doing an awesome, awesome job. Now, if you want to, you can call them directly or email them for more information. They have special ticket prices if you buy them on the web. The toll-free number is 888-233-3895. That's 888-233-3895. And the email is info@WashingtonRenFair.com. That's info@WashingtonRenFair.com. Come on out and join us. You'll enjoy the jousting, the dancing, the music, the comedy, the games, the food. Oh, just so much fun. And you can shop till you drop. It's absolutely awesome. Be sure you stop by my booth. You'll recognize it because it has bright yellow banners with gigantic red lions on it. So hope to see you there. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. If you want to do something wild and crazy on a vacation, well, there are underwater caves. If you're a person that likes to swim, likes to scuba dive, this is absolutely phenomenal. And there are so many people who want to do it, but there is a reality with it. It can be quite dangerous. You should always have a guide or someone with you. But there are huge, huge networks of underwater caves that span North America from California and Missouri to Florida and Yucatan. Now, you can venture into this alien world. Ah, yes, they often say it's one of the last of the unexplored frontiers. But there is a need for you to understand. Again, you don't do it by yourselves. Experts estimate that less than 1% of the recreational diving population possesses the knowledge, skills, attitude, and judgment needed to cave dive as safely as possible. Now, there's a man, Johnny Richards, who works full-time as a cave diving instructor in northern Florida. He also has an informational website called cavediving.com, cavediving.com. Now, a lot of people, because they did not pay attention to what they needed to pay attention to, have died since 1960, and you must be aware that you should be trained. Yes, they do have training for this, and you must be cognizant of all the risks that are associated with cave diving. But it would be a wonderful experience if you're with a good team of people. It can be absolutely incredible. Now, you need to be, if you want to become a cave diver, you need to be a certified scuba diver and accumulate open water diving experience. Then seek out a cavern and cave diving course. And here is, if you want to find out more about cave diving, you go to the National Association for Cave Diving. And their website is safecavediving.com. My goodness, we're out of time. This hour just went by like the wind. It always does, doesn't it, when you're having a good time? And it's so enjoyable to spend time with the authors that I have and with you as well. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Seabow. Have a safe, dynamic, totally enjoyable weekend. We'll be back here with you, same time, same place, right here on BBSRadio.com. This is Donna Seabow. Bye for now.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
You have been listening to The Donna Seabow Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Seabow Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Jason.